So maybe to again welcome you, we've had now for a number of years a solstice gathering, and we change our format a little, and it's this round we don't have a special program for our children, but we have some children that'll be joining us, so we'll have a shorter period of time of meditation and Dharma talk, and then open and have more of a community kind of a ceremony. But I thought maybe I'd begin tonight. Some of you know the poet Hafiz, who I read from a lot and love his poetry. And there's a description about in his lifetime, many people would come to him for advice. And one man came and said, you know, I've had an amazing experience, profoundly enlightening. And he described meditating, going into incredible silence and having a vision of the divine and merging with light and love and really spectacular. And he said, was it real? Was that real? And so Hafiz was silent, and then he started asking the man some questions. And his first question was, do you have any goats? Then he said, do you have a wife, children, siblings? Do you have parents? Do you have friends? Do you have acquaintances in town? And then he went on to say, the realness of the sacred shows itself through the kindness you express with each being in your life. That is what realness is in terms of spiritual unfolding, this expression of kindness. That's the way it's lived or felt. The Dalai Lama put it quite simply. He said, my religion is kindness. Remember that? He's not very into being a Buddhist. You know, it's my religion is kindness. And then this from Mary Oliver that I just found. She says, in praise of craziness of a certain kind, on cold evenings, my grandmother, with ownership of half her mind, the other half having flown back to Bohemia, spread newspapers over the porch floor so, she said, the garden ants could crawl beneath as under a blanket and keep warm. And what shall I wish for myself, but being so struck by the lightning of years, to be like her with what is left, that loving? So tonight, and it seems just kind of appropriate, the theme of a solstice evening, which is really with these long nights, which really turn us towards discovering that kind of inner light and the warmth of heart that's really timeless. It's a beautiful time for that. And it's intrinsic to most faiths that in some way the expression of waking up, the expression of what's real and sacred comes in this, that we treat each other with kindness. And of course we know it's mostly not so easy. Some of you might remember a story, Sunday school teachers discussing the Ten Commandments with her 5- and 6-year-olds. And after explaining the commandment to honor thy father and thy mother, she asked, is there a commandment that teaches us how to treat our brothers and sisters? Without hesitating, one little boy, this is the oldest of a family, answered, thou shalt not kill. You know. So in the Buddhist tradition, this is the path of the Bodhisattva that we're really talking about, where we include our inner life, and this is in the meditation. It's not just to get quiet and notice. It's to notice with a quality of wholeheartedness. Because, you know, we really can't see what's here unless there's a quality of tenderness in our hearts. If we're noticing and there's any judgment or aversion, we can't really see clearly what's right here. So we begin with this practice of holding this inner life with a quality of friendliness, unconditional friendliness. And then we widen the circles. And the basic teaching, and this is not just Buddhism, that our care is a product of attention. That when we really pay attention, there's a natural expression of care. when we really see another and we're really, really paying attention, what we're going to see is their humanness, their vulnerability, and we're going to see their goodness. You know, it's both qualities. Longfellow put it wonderfully, and I go back to this a lot. He says, if we could read the secret history of our enemies, we should find in each man's life sorrow and suffering enough to disarm all hostility. So we slow down and look, and we sense the secret history, that this person too is struggling. Everybody is. But that's just one dimension. There's another part of it, which is if we could see the secret heart of others, and that's sometimes what's buried beneath the hurts and the fears, but if we could see the secret heart of each other, you know, if we could slow down and look into the eyes that are really the windows of the soul and just see that which wants to love and be loved, that which is intrinsically tender, we wouldn't be able to withhold our love. And more, it seems clear to me that it's the withholding, the holding back our love, you know, not really expressing our care, that it sours within us. There's a kind of a toxicity when we're not able to really feel and express that basic sentiment of appreciating, of caring. It turns us on in some way. So what really stops us? You know, what is it that stops us from paying attention to each other and seeing the vulnerability, seeing the secret suffering? What stops us from seeing the secret heart? There's a saying, and I don't remember where I heard it, but it's, to be kind, we must swerve often from our track. And I think that's really, really good, because most of us, when we're in trance, and those of you that have been around know what I mean by trance, which is when we're caught in our preoccupation. We're on our way somewhere, we're wanting something, we're trying to get something done, we're trying to avoid something. Okay, we're on our track. We're not able to really pay attention, in a way, both to our inner life and to each other, in a way that'll allow that kind of flowering of our heart. We might be paying attention partly, but usually our compassion's a bit abstract because we're preoccupied. So the teaching on the Bodhisattva path is that our naturalness, when we're not preoccupied, is to have this kind of radiance and love that's just the expression of our nature. And the clouds that obscure it are that we get preoccupied. So in a way, meditation is a training in how not to be so preoccupied, how to look more carefully. And what we find is that whenever there is strong wanting, we're on this track of, it's like that saying, when a pickpocket sees a saint, they see the saint's pocket. You know, that's, remember that saying? It's like we're on this track and we just see what is going to meet our agenda. We're with another. If we're needing them to recognize us or approve of us, or if we're wanting their money, or if we're wanting their time, or whatever it is, we're not going to see the wholeness of who's there. There's a, somebody wrote once, when you're in love, it's the most glorious 2.5 days of your life, you know? I thought that's great, because infatuation's like that. It's like when we're infatuated, there's this initial chemical rush that we're anticipating massive pleasure forever after, you know? And it's very chemical. And those chemicals filter what we see. We might even see stuff that later on we go, wow, I already saw that, but now it really matters. Then it didn't. But you know what I mean? We don't see. We're in a trance. So it's the same thing when we're with somebody else and in some way we're trying to protect ourselves or feel threatened. We can't see who's there. We're too busy in some way trying to be safe. We can't really look. It says that there's an understanding that I heard or read one place that when women are anxious, basically they eat or shop, and when men are anxious, they attack another country. So we all have our methods of what do we do with our anxiety. That's kind of depressing, I know. Forgive me. But basically, and this is most common, sometimes we're with somebody, and it's not like we want something a lot from that person, and it's not like we're really fearing something, but we're still preoccupied in a way that we're on our way somewhere, and we kind of take for granted, well, I'll feel the flush of love with this being another time. We kind of put off being loving. We in some way take things for granted. There was this little story about when I stopped the bus to pick up Chris for preschool. This is a bus driver talking. I noticed an older woman hugging him as he left the house. "Is that your grandmother?" I asked. "Yes," Chris said. "She's come to visit us for Christmas." "How nice," I said. "Where does she live?" "At the airport," Chris replied. "Whenever we want her, we just go out there and get her." You know. So the bottom line, what prevents us from loving fully is this trance of selfing, where we're on a track trying to get something that we don't have. It's that sense of the next moment containing what this moment does not. We're trying to get something, or else we're trying to protect from something. And we're not really able to pay the kind of attention that reveals the secret suffering and the secret heart of who's here. So the practices, and we're going to do some of the loving kindness practice tonight, but the practices are how to stop. Really, how to stop in that preoccupation and really look. How to stop and sense who is here. It doesn't happen that much in our encounters with each other. So in the loving kindness practice, there's really two parts. And the first part is to see the goodness or see the vulnerability. And the second part is actually to offer some expression of care. And it could be silently or could be out loud. But both are critical, to see what's true. And then love is active. It's expressive. And when we're in trance, we're not usually registering goodness. It's abstract or mental. We're not in our hearts kind of feeling the poignancy of, that being's goodness. And we certainly, and again, if the loving kindness practice, we start with the life that's right within us. It's not that often that we just appreciate the goodness, the sacredness of the life that's right here. In fact, we have this idea that that's kind of immodest, or we'll get in trouble if we honor the life that's right here. It feels a little awkward to us. So we're going to do two pieces of the loving kindness practice this evening. And the first is really just a sense of, can we behold and hold this inner life in a way that's kind? And then widening the circles. And just a comment on the inner life, which is that sometimes we might sense, well, how can I find the goodness? And it helps to look through another's eyes sometimes at ourselves. But let's experiment. Just take a moment, if you will. Close your eyes. And just feel the breath. And let your attention come into your heart. And feel the life that's here. You might mentally whisper "here." And just feel the vibration and aliveness of the body. Feel your heart. It might feel raw, it might feel tight. Might feel tender, might feel closed or open, just to feel this heart. And just to sense this life that's here and the goodness of it. And you might bring to mind a quality or of who you are that gets expressed, maybe your humor, your honesty, your way of helping others. It might be that you bring to mind your deep intent, because we are our deepest intention, that your deep intention is to be awake, to live the life fully, to live love fully. So just to sense the goodness that's here. Sense the awareness, the actual wakefulness that's right here, this innate, intrinsic quality of presence. So there's a sense of bowing to what's here. And if it's helpful, to bring to mind someone that you know cares about you, that sees you truly and lovingly. And to feel that person's presence right here and imagine you could look through their eyes at yourself. Seeing the goodness. Seeing what they love. And just mentally whisper whatever prayer of care you'd like to offer to yourself this solstice evening. So often this loving-kindness practice begins with looking truly at the life within, seeing the goodness, holding with care. And then we widen the circles and often bring to mind someone that's a benefactor that's been kind, see their goodness, offer our care to that person. And then widening it further to those that we might call neutral people that we see. We don't have a strong connection to either way, but can we begin to stop and look more closely? Who's here? It's like one woman described it. She was practicing the loving kindness meditation with the neutral category, and she said she got into this habit of looking at people's eyes as if she wanted to memorize what their eyes looked like. Really looking and then asking that question, who is this? And she'd sometimes just meditate on the word, you are my friend. This was with anybody. And feel this instantaneous sense of caring. So we widen to the people we don't necessarily have a strong reaction to. And then we widen, and this is what I'd like to end with, to include those that are difficult. Which is really the hope for this earth, that we can widen our sense of awareness and attention to include those that our conditioning has us create as other, as enemy. Can we see their goodness? If you can see another's goodness, you help to bring it alive in them. That is the power of mirroring, of metta. Short story, and then we'll do our final little meditation. A man from New York was mugged at gunpoint. He was a Buddhist practitioner. He'd been working with these practices we're talking about now for years. And his name was Phil. One evening on a small side street in Soho, a disheveled man with a scraggly beard and dirty blonde hair accosted him and demanded his money. Phil gave him over $600 that he carried in his wallet. The mugger shook his gun and demanded more. Stalling for time, Phil handed him his credit cards and the whole wallet. Looking dazed and high on some drug, the mugger said, I'm going to shoot you. Phil responded, no, wait, here's my watch. It's an expensive one. Disoriented, the mugger took the watch, waved the gun, and said again, "I'm going to shoot you." Somehow, Phil managed to look at him with loving kindness and said, "You don't have to shoot me. You did really good. Look, you nearly got $700. You got credit cards and an expensive watch. You don't have to shoot me. You did good." The mugger, confused, lowered his gun slowly. "I did good?" he half-asked. "You did really good. Go and tell your friends you did good." Dazed, the mugger wandered off, saying softly to himself, "I did good." I wanted to share that with you tonight because it doesn't always work out like that. But there's a possibility when we can step out of our conditioning and look with the eyes that see the secret suffering, look with the eyes that see the secret heart, that if we can do that, we bring out that goodness. There's a possibility for genuine healing. That's the power of mirroring. It's the true gift we give to our children when we can look at them and see the goodness and trust that beyond all the conditioning that's playing out. And it's the gift we give to each other as friends, to our partners, to see the divine that's looking out at us. So we'll do our final little practice with the loving kindness, if you will, just to close your eyes again. And again, just to feel the breath and feel your heart. And in some way, just to bow to the life that's within you with loving kindness. To sense the goodness, your sincerity in being here tonight. The deep longing to love and be loved, to wake up, to be free. Just bowing. And with that quality of tenderness, to bring to mind someone who's very easy for you to love, someone you appreciate, feel gratitude towards. And on this solstice evening, just to feel that being's presence here might be the one you look through their eyes at your own self through. To sense that person's goodness, what it is that makes it easy for you to love them. Their kindness, their honesty, the way they show their love. So that as you feel that person's goodness viscerally, feel your connection with them. And just offer whatever message of care you'd like. Just mentally whisper their name and offer your care. Widening the circle now to include those you might not know so well. Perhaps including someone that you saw tonight here. Maybe you said hello to or that you saw as you were coming in. And just hold that being in your heart, sensing the natural hurts and losses that person might be have gone through. And the goodness of being, their essence. And offer your message of well-wishing, of care. and then widening again, to take some moments this evening to bring to mind someone who's maybe a little difficult for you. You don't have to bring up someone who's traumatic, just a little difficult, irritating. And forgive your own irritation first. Just forgive that. And sense if you can include this person in your heart and sense their vulnerability, their fears, and their intrinsic goodness. Offering whatever message or prayer of care comes naturally. May you too be happy. May you be free. And sensing the edgelessness of heart, this field of care that's here, that includes your own life, and life of beloved ones, those that you don't know so well, those who are difficult, and really all beings everywhere. Closing with the words of Thomas Merton, "Then it was as if I suddenly saw the secret beauty of their hearts, the depth of their hearts where neither sin nor knowledge could reach, the core of reality, the person that each one is in the eyes of the divine. If only they could see themselves as they really are. If only we could see each other that way all the time, there would be no more need for war, for hatred, for greed, for cruelty. I suppose the big problem would be that we would fall down and worship each other." Sensing that you can hold this world in your heart and offer the blessings of loving kindness, of metta, to all beings everywhere. Namaste. So we'll be continuing doing just a little bit of a shifting. I'd like to invite you, if you'd like to use these moments to stand up and stretch, as we sometimes do in the middle, and just take a mindful, just keeping it somewhat quiet. Okay, so then please make yourself comfortable. If there's any children that would like to come up front, you're very much invited. Now, if there's only a few, I quite understand it might feel uncomfortable. We'll let you sit where you are. If any of you have inner children that want to come up front, come on. So for our first part of this phase, I'd like to introduce Cindy Matakis, who's been with us now for, I think this is maybe the fifth time, who's a consummate storyteller, wonderful, usually does it with the children and a lot of props, but tonight will engage us with not as many children or props.
So tonight I'm going to tell you a story that I've adapted from an Inuit myth, and I guess most of you know where the Inuits come from. And since there aren't too many children, maybe everybody can sort of remember the story and take it home and tell the children that you know. During the solstice, when it's really cold and when the wind gets teeth of ice and nobody really wants to go outside, and the fire gets really warm inside the celebration house. And it seems to be whispering to everybody that they should stay. Stay just a little bit longer. Somebody will usually get up and tell a story. And that's the way it was on the particular night that this story comes from. There was an elder who stood up, and she looked around at all the people in the room, and she said, "You know, our people didn't always get along this well." And one of the children said, "Well, why not?" And she said, "Well, who knows? Some of them argued about who was the strongest, who was the best cook, who could pick the most berries, who threw the spears the furthest. They just bickered about all kinds of things." And one of the grown-ups in the back of the room said, "Well, you know, these aren't very important things, and I don't know why you're making such a big deal of it, and why are you talking to us like this?" And so she got this kind of fierce look in her eyes, and she said, "You know, our people lost their ability to feel joy. Our people worked so hard and grew so weary because they didn't share things with each other, because they didn't help each other, because they hoarded what they had, and if they were helpless and needed help, they were afraid to ask. That's why we lost our joy." Now the grown-ups in the back of the room looked really uncomfortable, and the children looked pretty confused. And so the elder stopped and smiled, and she said, "Let me tell you a story." So everybody settled down, because a story is not threatening. And besides, this story, she said, was going to be about Grandmother Eagle. And everybody liked to hear stories about Grandmother Eagle, because she was their special spirit animal. They were called the Eagle Clan people. So they really liked to hear all the different things that she had done. And so the elder began the story. She said Grandmother Eagle had been on a long journey. She had taken her grandson, and they traveled to the north, to the south, to the east, and to the west. They'd gone all over the world, and they had met all the different animals. And when they got back, and they were on the highest mountain peak that overlooked the Eagle Clan village in the big nest that Grandmother Eagle had built, she said, "Now that you've seen how wonderful all the animals are, and how they just know who they are, how the bears all know that they're healers, and the turtles all know how to protect themselves, now you have to go down and meet the Eagle Clan people, our people, and come back and tell me what you find." So the grandson was feeling pretty good about this, because he'd heard all kinds of things about his people, but he hadn't really met them yet. So he flew down, and he looked around, but it didn't look good. There were people bickering and fighting. Mostly, though, what he saw was an incredible weariness. People were tired. People were feeling kind of hopeless. And people were not joyful at all. So he thought, you know, this is going to be pretty bad. I can't go back up and tell my grandmother this. I got to find somebody. And eventually he did find this young girl, who he happened to think was pretty as well. And she did seem to still feel joyful. The trouble was nobody else around her treated her that well, but she seemed to be able to hold on to something pure and good. And so he felt better. And he flew up and he said to, you know, he got up there and he said, "Well, Grandmother, I don't have really good news. There is one person down there who seems to be pretty joyful, but the rest of them have kind of lost their bearings. They don't really understand who they are, I don't think." And she was like, I don't believe this. These are our people. This is the Eagle Clan people." And she flew down. And she was so disappointed with what she saw that when she came back up to the nest, she got very, very sad and really, really tired. And she said to her grandson, "I need to speak to the animals in the world that we met, but I can't take the song now. I'm too tired." And so she sang this song, which I can't sing very well, but I'll tell it to you. she said, these are the people of the ice. These are the people of the ice and snow. Come and give them your advice. Come and tell them all you know. These are the people of the earth. These are the people of the earth and sea. Come and teach them of their worth. Come and teach them how to be all that they were born to be. And the grandson felt really moved by his grandmother's song, and he took it deep into his heart, and he flew again to the north and the south and the east and the west, and he met with all the animals, and he sang this song to them. And they all felt really touched by it. And so they sent with him the spirit guides from their kind of animal. So all these spirit guides flew up with the eagle to the Eagle Clan village. And that night, when the people went to sleep, they dreamed of their spirit guide. They dreamed of their special animal that could teach them exactly what they needed to know. And in fact, the spirit guides took them up in their dreams, and they went on long journeys. Some of them flew, some of them ran, some swam in the sea. But wherever they went and whatever they did, they began to learn what they really needed to know. Well, this was all fine and good, except for this one girl who didn't really need a spirit guide, who still had that sense of joy, and she wakes up, and there's nobody there. Everybody in the entire village is gone. She's thinking, you know, what could have happened to my people? And then she sees this grand eagle fly out over this icy lake and stand very noble and huge and a little bit scary. And she thinks, this is no ordinary eagle. I've got to go and talk to this eagle. I've got to find out if this eagle knows where my people are. So she goes out on the ice lake, and it wasn't typical of people to walk up to spirit animals and just chat with them. So she was a little uncomfortable. But she decided, you know, she had to do this. So she walks up to the eagle, and she says, excuse me, but do you know where my people are? And he turns his head, and he looks at her, and he says, you dare speak to me? And she goes, yeah, I have to speak to you. Where are my people? And he says, well, if you want to know where your people are, you have got to climb that highest mountain. And she said, all right, I'll do it. And so she climbed and climbed and climbed, and finally she reached the top where grandmother's eagle's nest was, and there she saw the weary and tired grandmother eagle. And she said to her, grandmother eagle, I've got to find my people. Where are my people? And Grandmother Eagle said, if you want to find your people, you need to rebuild the ceremonial house. And then she explained how it had to be built, all the dimensions, and how it should be made. And so the girl did that. She went and she got everything. She got the stones and the sticks and the mud, and she built this beautiful ceremonial house. And then she went back and she said to Grandmother Eagle, okay, I've built this house. Now, where are my people? And then Grandmother Eagle said, well, if you want to find your people, then you have to learn all the old songs and all the dances that tell our people who we are. And so she did. She learned every song and every dance. And while she was learning them, it was actually the grandson who was kind of helping her learn them. And then Grandmother Eagle flew out to try to find the people because she was feeling better. But what she found was that they didn't want to come back. They wanted to stay in their animal nature. So she went back and she was a little worried, and she said, well, I know you've learned all the dances and the songs, but now you're going to have to go and get the people and bring them back. So the grandson took her on his back, and they flew all over the world, and they gathered all the people, and they brought them back, except they were still animals. And when they got back to the ceremonial house, it was really hard to get them inside, and she didn't know what to do. And Grandmother Eagle said, take them one at a time. into the house and teach them the dances and teach them the songs. And then they'll remember who they truly are. And so one at a time she took them in, and one by one they remembered who they were. Except that they also remembered what they'd learned. And so they were who they really were. The elder stopped there, and everybody was looking really happy. This was a really nice story, and everybody was feeling really good about themselves and about their life, and they all got up and they thanked her very much. She smiled and said, "You're welcome." And then they all went home. And that night, when they went to sleep, every one of them had a dream. They heard the great heartbeat of some animal somewhere. And their heartbeat joined the heartbeat of that animal. And they traveled, and they journeyed, and they learned everything they needed to learn. And it seemed to them that they had been gone for months and months. But they woke up in the morning, and they were there. And they came out and they looked at each other as if they'd never seen each other before. And they told each other their dreams. And one of them said she had traveled with the owl. And she said, "I think it's like we're stars in the sky. And when we're alone, we're just one tiny star. We don't have a lot of light. But when we're all together, we light up the whole sky." And everybody felt really good about her story. And each of them began to tell what they'd been through and what they'd learned. And then they decided, we've got to really rebuild the ceremonial house. We've really got to make it what it's supposed to be. And so they worked very hard and they built the house. And then some of them made masks of their animal. And they worked on the songs and the dances. And they were all ready to have this amazing, wonderful celebration for their solstice. And then they looked around and they said, "Well, wait a minute. We can't do this without the elder who told us this great story." And so they all went over to the elder's house and looked for her. But she wasn't there. And they looked everywhere. And she wasn't anywhere. And then one of the children looked up in the sky and said, "There she is." And sure enough, there was a grand eagle flying over their heads. And every year after that year, when they gather for the solstice, they tell that story about how Grandmother Eagle came and taught them to be who they really were meant to be. One of the elders will stand up and say, "You know, our people didn't always get along so well." Thank you. Pleasant dreams.
Thank you, Cindy. And yeah, I'm glad you said pleasant dreams. Tonight could be interesting. I'd like to introduce Shauna Simon to you, who's been with us now a number of years in a row, leading chanting. And what we're going to be doing is starting the first chant of the evening is Om Mani Padme Hum. And for those of you that are not familiar with this, the words literally mean that the jewel is in the lotus. But take a moment to sense this is one of the most powerful and central chants in the Buddhist tradition, Om Mani Padme Hum. And what it means, Om Mani Padme Hum, is that as we wake up to the jewel of compassion. As we wake up, our hearts flower with compassion. Om Mani Padme Hum. Please listen and join in as you will.
this next chant is something some of you may be familiar with. It's Heyana Hoyana Heyanyan. And there's also the English words. It's a native Hopi chant.
The earth is our mother. We must take care of her. The earth is our mother. We must take care of her. Hey, Yana, ho, Yana, hey, Yana, Yana. Hey, Yana, ho, Yana, hey, Yana, Yana. The earth is our mother. We must take care of her. The earth is our mother. We must take care of her. Hey, Yana, ho. Her sacred ground we walk upon, with every step we take. Her sacred ground we walk upon, with every step we take. Hey, Yana, ho, Yana, hey, Yan, Yan. Hey, Yana, ho, Yana, hey, Yan, Yan. Her sacred ground we walk upon, with every step we take. Her sacred ground we walk upon, with every step we take. Hey, Yana, ho, Yana, hey, Yan, Yan. Hey, Yana, hey, Yana, hey, Yan, Yan. The earth is our mother. She will take care of us. The earth is our mother. She will take care of us. Hey, Yana, ho, Yana, hey, Yan, Yan. Hey, Yana, ho, Yana, hey, Yan, Yan. The earth is our mother. She will take care of us. The earth is our mother. She will take care of us. With myself, I will love myself. I am a child of the universe, being born each moment. I will be gentle with myself. I will love myself. I am a child of the with myself. I will love myself. I am a child of the universe, being born each moment. Hey, Yana, ho, Yana, hey, Yan, Yan. Hey, Yana, ho, Yana, hey, Yan, Yan. Hey, Yana, ho, Yana, hey, Yan, Yan. Hey,
and what we're going to ask is if the lights could be dimmed a little bit, and I'm going to invite you all, if you will, to stand up. And in this ceremony, we reflect on this light that is really the light within all beings, that's timeless and that's eternal, and that we can call on it We can invite it in our silence and in our deep attention, and we can pass it to each other. We can wake it up in each other. So it's in that spirit that we'll be lighting our candles and passing it on. And I just want to say one thing technical about passing the light on, which is the candle that's lit stays standing up. It's the candle that's receiving the light that bends over like a bowing to the light and to receive it. But the lit one, upright. Okay, otherwise we get into some trouble. Okay. And as we reflect on this light, this love, that which is timeless, we'll be chanting together. So I'm going to ask if our board members will to light the initial ones, and we'll begin to spread the light and chant together. Thank you. Just to look around and see the light that's around us, to feel that inner radiance, that light of awareness and heart that connects us. And it's in this field of wakefulness that we send our prayers for peace, for healing, for awakening to all beings. So just to feel a sense of this field that holds this planet, this earth, our mother, that holds all beings. through all time and all space in all places. May all beings everywhere be filled with loving presence. Awaken to the loving presence that is true nature. Live from that presence. May all beings everywhere touch a natural and great peace. May there be peace on earth. May there be peace on earth. May there be peace on earth. May all beings everywhere awaken and be free. Namaste. Closing with, may the long time sun shine upon you. Solstice blessings, holiday blessings, peace.
The teaching you have received has been freely offered. If you would like to contact the Insight Meditation Community of Washington to make a donation or to learn more about our programs, please visit our website at www.imcw.org.